This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Tuesday, March 7th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for the day as we start the celebration of Women's International Day. I'm actually having a fun time trying to celebrate with them, right? That is my goal and that's my objective. And in order to start that celebration, I invited someone here who I'm excited to interview to hear her story as we celebrate women. And that's no other than Mrs. Jenny Isaacs-Dotson. And I've known her like for at least 10 years, right? From afar. And I always want to know, like, how did she get to be a head of a union? How she get into politics? Right? You know? And she's a, for lack of a better, demure lady, small, petite, but she roars like a lion. People respect her. You know? I have had some person compare her to the Prime Minister of Barbados. Say, no, we have our own. We have Jenny Dotson. And I say, yeah. They have her in that type of esteem. And I want to hear her story about her becoming woman. Her surviving inside this patriarch society, right? How did she come into being? And that's what our conversation is going to be about. And of course, I'm going to tease her about the women's liberal movement and tease her about the place of women. Is it still to be in the home, cooking barefoot and pregnant and having children? I can tease about it, right? I'm going to hear her opinions on such. But without further ado, I introduce to you labor unionists, political civil rights, women's leader, advocate, Jennifer Isaacs-Dotson. Welcome. I'm pulling my mic a little closer to you.
Thank you, C.A. It is indeed a pleasure.
And her mic needs to be connected. Is it now? Do that again, Ms. Dotson.
Okay, thank you, C.A. It's indeed a pleasure to be here.
Good.
I haven't been to Guardian for a while, but it's always good to be here.
Welcome back home. Welcome back home. But I will start with who are you in terms of who your parents are, right?
Okay.
Where did you grow up? Right? What school did you attend? I just want to get that narrative in out so people know.
Who am I?
That's a hard question, you know. That is
That's
a
hard question.
No?
Most people know me as Jenny. Jennifer is, you know, they tend to call you Jenny and informally. I'm the daughter of Mary. People call her Eugene Ferguson Blyden. She was Martha Blyden. And of course, my father is Edward. They call him Ned Isaacs from Kett Island. Most people know him. He, of course, is the oldest brother of Kendall G.L. Isaacs, who was my uncle, who really was very instrumental in my life, me and my brother, Charles, because he took care of us, really, because my father had a lot of kids. But, you know, I grew up on E Street, Gibbs Corner. I always tell people that. Went to Thatchbury Primary. Most people don't even know where that is because it doesn't
exist. That's Naomi Blatch, is it? Thatchbury Primary?
Thatchbury Primary is actually where Learning Resources Unit is now.
Ah, okay.
That used to be a school.
That's Mackey Street.
Yes.
Okay.
And then from there, I went on to D.W. Davis. And then from D.W. Davis, I went on to R.M. Bailey Senior High School.
So you had an inner city life?
Yes, of course. I tell people I'm from the ghetto. I have to remind my students of that sometimes when I used to teach. I say, don't mind me being a teacher. Mm-hmm. I did not grow up out east, out west, so don't kind of get me mixed up. And from there, I went into nursing. I'm a registered nurse by profession. That is my first profession. Okay. Teaching is my second profession. And again, most people don't realize that. But I went into nursing just as I came out of high school, trained, and then worked at Sandlands, worked in intensive care. Worked in accident and emergency prior to me leaving nursing and moving on to teaching.
So you were throughout the hospital care unit. I mean, that's 3-4 big areas.
Yeah, well, you know, in your training, you have to work in every area. And, you know, after being in nursing, I was offered a scholarship by, of course, Cynthia Mother Pratt, who was then at St. Aug at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She knew the kind of athlete that I was. So she said to me one day, you're never interested in going off to school? And I said, yeah, I was always interested in going off to school, but no one ever asked me. Mm-hmm. And so she offered me a scholarship to come to St. Aug to play volleyball and softball. And I was able to get leave from the Ministry of Health to go off. And that was when I majored in health and physical education because they didn't have a nursing program at St. Aug. I thought about being a doctor, and I was like, no, too many years. And I hated math at the time, so I was like, no, I ain't doing no medicine. And so I did health and physical education, so that is where I did my bachelor's degree. And when I came back home and came back into nursing and asked them to pay me for my degree, even though my degree says health and physical education, they told me my degree was not relevant.
Wow.
So I said, well, send me where it's relevant. And that was how I got into teaching.
That's how you get into teaching after that.
Right. So I've taught at a number of schools. I taught Nabucco for a short time. Taught here, taught at CC, predominantly junior and senior. Taught at AF Hadley very briefly, Government High. Those were the schools that I taught at.
And before we start talking about the union, because I know when you mentioned Government High, the union words come up, right? I just now learning that you were a sports person.
Yes.
And mind you, I'm prejudging you on your size and your stature, right? And that's what I want to hear about this sports career. I mean, what do you mean? What sports did you play?
I played every sport in high school, every sport from swimming to field hockey to netball, volleyball, softball, track. I did everything. I'm an Isaacs. Yeah. The Isaacs are known for their sporting prowess.
And would you say being athletic, being involved in sports in general is important for a woman, first of all, and young persons in general?
I think sports is important in any young child's life for their development. It teaches you a lot of lessons, you know, how to be determined, how to lose and still go out there the next time, and not give up, to be determined and to be successful in life. I say to people that sports really gave me the qualities to be in the many positions that I've held. And being the first woman to hold a number of those positions is critical. And I think it's because of sports and the people who helped me along that journey in sports, like a Mother Pratt, like Ozzie Moore, a number of persons, Timmy Barrett, who died. There were a number of persons who played key roles from I was very, very young, who, you know, when we started playing volleyball, I was very young at the time. I was still in high school. And so, you know, but I've had the fortune I tell people through sports, I've made friendships that continue even today. And that to me is what being in sports is all about. I've made friends like Cora and Margaret and those people who were a little bit older than me, but still we became good friends through playing sports, playing on the national team. And even some of the students that I taught, who I later got and encouraged to play sports, came on to end up playing with me. When I tell my students that at UB, who I teach, I said, always remember, you may be teaching this person now, but one day they may also grow up to be your friend.
Yes.
And
yes.
So you have to make sure that you instill in them the values and things. You may be hard on them, but it's through sports that you're teaching them lifelong lessons.
You mentioned Mother Pratt giving you an opportunity, right? And there's a number of leaders in the Bahamas who call her name, say, if it wasn't for Mother Pratt, if it wasn't for Mother Pratt, I wasn't going to get this opportunity to further my education.
Right.
And you being an inner city youth, right? Your success was, I became a nurse. I'm good now, right? And along came Mother Pratt and said, hey, I have an opportunity for you. Right. Are you interested? How important is that? And I'm not sure we have that anymore. Like the Mother Pratt's has vanished. And I'm concerned for other inner city youth, other inner city women who have the talent to go further, to change the Bahamas, but just don't get access.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to establish programs and things within the inner city to encourage particularly young girls to participate more in sports. I think that is important. The world has kind of changed, and a lot of young girls, because I see it still when I go into the schools to see my students teach, you see, I think our basic problem in our society is the lack of parenting. And I think that is the difference between where we were then and where we are now. Parents are not parenting. Children don't feel loved. Children don't feel cared for. They feel like they're pretty much on their own. So we have to provide avenues where they can get that in as a part of an organization, I think is important. And I think all of us, in our own way, try to do things to mentor young ladies. I may do it now through politics and the other areas that I'm involved in. But I think it's important. I think it's important to share your story as well so that young persons know that, well, if she did it and she grew up through Gibbs Corner, you know, I can do it too.
Awesome.
And that is it. And I also had a son at the time when I went off to school.
Yeah, and you went off to school still?
I still went off to school. And my mother was very supportive of me. She always encouraged me to be a better person. Always.
Nice. We need strong mothers out there. Yeah. So now let's talk about your career. The last school you mentioned was GHS. And I know from your bio, that's when you got interested in unionism.
Right.
That movement. You were a shop steward at GHS. You know, right. The government couldn't use you inside the hospital and sent you to be a teacher. And you went around different schools and you settled at GHS. And you were there to mold minds. And all of a sudden, you became a unionist.
Yeah, I blame Denise Mortimer. She was instrumental in that. Because I think it was in a staff meeting where I started to speak up about some things that was happening in the school. And she grabbed me and she's like, "Man, Jen, you need to come in the union." And I was like, "What? Union?" And that was really how my career in trade unionism started. It was at Government High. And later on, she was already an officer in the Bahamas Union of Teachers. And she encouraged me to run for office in the Bahamas Union of Teachers. And I went on to become an executive officer and the assistant secretary general in the Bahamas Union of Teachers under Donald Simonet and also Kingsley Black.
Mm-hmm. And then you've later become the vice president external and the president of the Union of Tertiary Educators.
I went on to become the first female president of UTEP. I went on to become the first president of the National Congress of Trade Unions, the only woman to ever hold that position.
A number of firsts. And yes. Then a number of firsts for a woman.
Yes.
In general.
Yes.
How was that? Because, mind you, again, and forgive me for harping on your size, right? Right? And we, like I said, it's a patriarchic society where men dominate things, mm-hmm. right? And I'm seeing that you, as a small in stature woman, be able to manage and lead and be innovative and lead men in general. Like, how is that even possible?
I think, again, through sports, sports teaches you that to be a leader in actuality. And I think my life, my family, particularly my siblings always encouraged me to do whatever it was that I wanted to do and that there was nothing to stop you from being what it is that you wanted to be. I grew up with 8 siblings. Mm-hmm. I was the youngest girl.
No, so you had to be aggressive.
So, exactly. So you had to be aggressive, you know, and, you know, I was always a tomboy when I was young. And I always played sports against boys. Like I used to go play on Father Marsh and Cooper Park. Because, you know, you could walk from Gibbs Corner straight through people's yards,
yes,
straight to Father Marsh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I used to be out there playing basketball. I would be the only girl. We used to go in Centerville Primary School yard. I would be the only girl out there playing softball.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with a lot of men around, boys and stuff around me. And I learned how to interact with them.
So remember I told you I was going to beat you?
Mm-hmm.
So you consider yourself equal to men, and I'm not meaning that as a sexist comment.
No, I know.
The idea that you felt comfortable that you were able to compete equally, because I know of a number of women say, "Oh, you're a boy, you shouldn't be doing this," because I was a girl.
Right. A lot of people say that to you. Of course, we should consider ourselves equal to men. There are differences in us in our gender and sex mm-hmm. and all those things, but that doesn't make us any less than what a man does, or stop us from doing what a man can do. And we see that even more in society, even internationally, regionally, and right here in the Bahamas, that women are rising to the occasion and doing more and more things that men, and particularly traditional things that we thought only was for men. Look at BEC and look at Metelco. Mm-hmm. You have women now on the lines. You have women in the bucket trucks
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that they weren't doing before.
Your career has given you opportunity to travel.
Yes.
I want you to mention one or two places that you were able to travel and what you did.
I have traveled so much I don't even know where to begin. I've traveled throughout the Caribbean. I was at one point the president of the Caribbean Congress of Labor, the first Bahamian female to hold that position.
Mm-hmm.
Not the first Bahamian. Leonard Archer was president of the Caribbean Congress of Labor, which is the union for the Caribbean.
Okay.
So I traveled extensively through the Caribbean and playing sports, of course, because a lot of the tournaments you would go to would be through the Caribbean. And then I've traveled the world extensively through the union as well, internationally. I've been to Brussels, Belgium, Switzerland a number of times, the International Labour Organization conference, France. I've traveled all over the world, China, Thailand. Mm-hmm. So I've really, I tell people I consider myself a well-rounded person and a world traveler, and I love to travel.
In terms of, again, unionism, can you give us one or two things you're proud of, like successes, like I did this, or under my regime, this was accomplished, and I'm most proud of that?
I think at the UBI would be proud of the industrial agreements that we negotiated and what we were able to get in those agreements. I think that that was a proud moment. We were able to move faculty to another level. And, you know, they still sometimes think that you should still be president of the union because, you know, I was off for a while and I just went back to UB. And the minute I got back, they was like, you're coming back to be president of the union? I'm like, no, you know, you have to know when it's time to move off the scene. Mm-hmm. Through the Caribbean Congress of Labor, we were involved in a project with the EU, with the European Union. They gave us some funding to do we had a project that we were doing with them, and so that required me traveling a lot, which started from I was under David Masayo, who from Antigua, who was then the president before I became the president. So we had a whole project which we did with the European Union, which was fundamental, with the CSME, actually. And so I think my exposure and throughout the world and the people that I've connected with, I always say to people, it's taught me that despite when you traveled, you realize that despite all of our issues in the Bahamas is still the best place.
It is the best place, right?
And I say to people, you know, I've traveled, but I always want to come back home.
I've traveled the Caribbean and said, oh, you're going back home, man. This is better.
And I love Barbados. Mm-hmm. I love Barbados. Been there a lot of times. I have a lot of friends in Barbados, but at every point, there's always a time to come back home. And Barbados is probably the closest Caribbean island to us. Yes. Yeah, we're very much similar. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I tell people, despite all our faults, you know, this country is still a good place to live.
Mm-hmm. There are some who would say that unionism has changed. And changed in the downward spiral that is challenged. In fact, that unionism is dead in the Bahamas. What do you say to that?
I don't think that trade unionism is dead. I think anytime you have union split, I think, and we've had quite a division happening in trade unionism because of egos. But I think with all of the different organizations that we have now that are supposed to be leading, from the NCTUB to Belinda Doe's organization to the TUC, it's actually three. When you look at it, we now have three congresses.
Yes, I see that. You're multiplying like Baptist churches.
In the Bahamas. But I think at some point it's going to come to head, and they're going to, you know, we've always seen the need to be able to collaborate and join each other. So I think at some point that is going to happen, and we'll get back together. It's going to have to happen if we want the trade union movement to move forward as one, and that's going to be important.
And I see I have a caller who wants to engage you, and before I have this caller engage you, of late, in the past 10, 15 years, no, actually longer, even the history of politics in the Bahamas, there have been former union heads who have ventured into politics. Even you mm-hmm. have ventured into politics, right? And of course, your union supporters say, man, no, you're betraying the union movement, right? We even now seeing former leaders becoming directors mm-hmm. of the union, labor, directors labor. Of labor, right? Yeah. And using
consultants
and using their labor tactics and knowledge in how unions maneuver against the unions. Like, y'all getting beat up left, right, and center. Y'all can't even strike properly because the people preempt you all. The director of labor's preempt unions, right? What do you think about your opinions about this new movement of labor union leaders taking these positions?
Well, it didn't just start. This has been going on for quite a while. Mm-hmm. From the Leonard Archers, from Donald Simonette, Kingsley Black, all of them, when they moved out of it, people saw the good that they were able to do. So they figured, okay, I can use you best in this area. And mm-hmm. I think that that is what it is. If you have the expertise and you've moved out, I think you must have a clear division of being in the union. You can't be in the union and also be in politics. You mm-hmm. can't be in the union and also be working for the government in a key position to a certain extent. So I think that those are the clear lines that we sometimes mm-hmm. have to draw. And I didn't go into politics until I had finished my term.
Yes.
Because I always saw it as a conflict. I couldn't see me being president of a union and then deciding to run in politics, because then I have a different allegiance.
Well, we've had directors who was saying they not going to run, but they're running, and they kept their position to the last minute and then decided to run. It's like, hey, are you a unionist or you're a politician? But I have this caller wants to engage him. Just put on your earpiece there so you can so you can actually hear them when they come on. Producer Patrick, call it through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
A pleasant good morning, Mr. Lurie.
Good morning, Des Sparky. How you doing?
And good morning to the great young short lady.
Thank you, Sparky.
You have a great, another one of those great Bahamian women in the studio with you. There are a lot of things around here, Mr. Nuri, I keep telling you. There's a lot of history floating around this little country that's not written in any book. When you hear the name Isaacs and the names that come from that Isaacs, Miss Jenny Dobson's Isaacs, she's a baby compared to some of the Isaacs that's still floating around here. But the Isaacs might be mingled up with the Hylas
right.
and the Fountains.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows what I'm talking about.
Yes.
This young lady sitting with you actually have uncles. She has nephews that are older than her.
Yes.
When I tell you, Dr. Philip Hyler, the chiropractor, has to call her auntie.
Correct.
And he's in his 70s. He has to call that lady auntie. Donzel George Hyler has to call her auntie. Her aunt Charlie, her brother Aunt Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is the great Ned Isaacs. You don't know the Ned Isaacs that traveled up and down this country and having a lot of young Isaacs, Tippy Pippies all around the place. But was a great man, Kendall Isaacs' brother.
Yes.
You have Dame Boyta Isaacs. You ever hear all these names, Mr. Lurie?
Nope.
You don't know? I keep telling you. You would be trying to run Sparky off. I'd be trying to give you information, but you can't read in no book. But I try to put it in your ear. But you don't listen. You ever heard about the gym tennis court?
Mm-hmm.
On the corner of Mackey Street and Wolf Road? Mm-hmm. Where the Esso gas station stands now? That used to be a court, a gym tennis court, over the hill where the elite Bahamian blacks used to congregate to play tennis.
Mm-hmm.
The Isaacs family, you ever heard about Bob Isaacs?
Yep, my brother.
Ricky Isaacs.
Mm-hmm.
Sammy Isaacs. Ricky Isaacs. Not Mickey, not Ricky. You ever heard about Andy Hyler? Uncle George Hyler, who used to make cowbells for every joke that would go in the Bay Street.
Yes.
That's that lady's family, right? They were sitting there in there with you, you know. But you might only know her from the Unionists. She played volleyball. Miss Isaac, you know, Sparky was there before you. I was with the Paradise Island Giants.
Yeah, I remember Paradise Island
Giants. With Ozzie Moore and all that crew. And Timmy Barrett and Brockles Barrett and all of us, Peter Battle and all of us.
Yes, sir.
From Government High, I went to B Government High also. These are things that young man said never don't know. But they ain't written in no book.
No, that's
the why we need to celebrate the women around here that nobody hardly talks about. Then they talk about the politicians. We only saw hear them talk about the men. But there's some women around here, Mr. Nuri, that are doing some things. In the shadows for many, many years. And there's something going to happen this year, and you're going to be surprised when it happens, when a group of people are going to honor some women. Women that were parents to young men that started Junkaloo groups. And if you give me a moment there, Mr. Nuri.
Well, I got to talk to with Jenny.
Jenny is part of this. See, Jenny is part of this.
Yes, and Ms. Sparky, and I appreciate it. And I appreciate the narrative. But I hear celebrating Jenny. I hear certainly want to know her narrative, and I appreciate you adding to it. And particularly when Sparky mentioned the Isaacs family, right? And I've come across the name through doing research on the Hannah Hastie Tyne family tree,
right?
And I've seen the name. I see the name attached to it. But I want to know, how important is family in terms of growing up strong, independent women? Right? Mm. How important is having a strong family background?
I think it's very important. My father may not have actually lived in my home, but one thing he always did was he made sure that we knew our family. And that was critical. So I always knew the Isaacs growing up. As I said, I worked in Al Kendall's law firm from when I was in school as a messenger. So I got to know my family very, very well. My father always made sure all of his children knew each other and that all of us knew the Isaacs family, and that they knew who we were.
Let me beat you again. Yeah. How many of you, how many siblings you have? How many of you are there?
I don't know. I think I got about 13 of us.
13,
but I'm sure
that's a good number.
I think it's probably more.
You may have an extra two or three, but it's like 30 is a round number that you commune with, embrace as family, right? But back on your career, and I mentioned that you're a number of firsts, and I know this 50th anniversary of Independence, they are celebrating women as part of their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And you being a number of, amongst that number of firsts in accomplishing things, right? I want to ask you, not being vain or egotistical, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how important it is to be recognized, to say, well, yes, I was the first, and thanks very much for acknowledging me.
I mean, it's important for people to know your story and to be recognized. But I think, in a sense, I need to tell my own story. And I really would, when I retire, I'd like to write a book about my life. And I think that that is important to do. So you can't always wait on people to tell your story. Sometimes you have to tell your own story.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenges that you went through and the things that
and
you
And are you doing that? Have you started to put pen to paper and say, no, I'm going to write down me traveling to show the Caribbean, me being head of this Congress here, and me being head of this union here? Have you said, I'm going to do that?
I've pretty much been able to do it. Actually, if you read my resume, which is very, very detailed, it kind of, you know, does it already for me. So it's just kind of going back now and being able to do probably a biography of myself and to write it. And like you say, before you get much older. So I plan on retiring very soon. So that is exactly what I will do.
You plan on retiring. So let's say what you're doing now. Because I know that you were a senator.
Right.
And I know that you had a bout of trying to become a member of parliament, Exuma, in fact, right? I won't bait you and say, how was that campaign and what your experience? I might just do that. Just say
it was good. I totally enjoyed it.
Since you volunteer and go ahead?
I don't have a problem talking about my experience at Exuma. It was a learning experience. And that's really how I look at my life. I look at everything that where God places me as a learning experience for something greater. And I looked at Exuma. And Exuma is huge. People don't realize how huge that constituency is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really a learning experience, and I learned a whole lot that if I decide to run again, or if I'm given the opportunity to run again, it will have given me the foundation to do that.
Okay, since we're talking about the campaign and running and being in politics, I want to know that conversation of they coming to you and say, hey, you're interested in running? Like that moment, someone come to you and say, I want to tap you on your shoulder to represent this constituency, to be the standard bearer for my party, for your party.
Would you want to know the feeling?
The emotions, the anxiety, what did you say? Did you say, yeah, of course, I'll do it. Why Exuma?
I thought it was an honor. Like I said, my mom was born in Exuma. My mom was born in Black Point.
Mm-hmm.
She is a Ferguson from Black Point. And so I knew Exuma very well, because every summer, when school closed, we were shipped to Black Point. And spend the entire summer there. So I was very, very familiar with Exuma. And I'm from Exuma.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't hide the fact that I'm from Exuma. And so I was a little skeptical in going to a family island, not living there. I think it's important that if you run on a family island, you kind of live there. At one point, I actually had to live there. And I actually was in Exuma yesterday. So I still go to Exuma a lot. I love Exuma. I think it's the most beautiful island in the Bahamas.
It's super pretty.
Although people always have arguments about it. But, you know, I still go back and still visit. I don't plan on running in Exuma again. I'll make that unequivocal. I know, I think I've had my baptism by fire moment. But I learned a lot.
Okay.
I learned a lot about running and being in politics. You know, a lot of things that you don't learn just sitting on the side. You have to actually participate to learn those things.
Women in politics, right? I think the Progressive Liberal Party has about, what, 5 or 7 of them, right? And they tout that they want to have a large number. But it's to me, it seems as if men accommodate women. They say, okay, you'll be that token one. You know, I need 4 of y'all. Only 4 of y'all. It doesn't seem as if women are actively involved. They need permission from these men. And I'm watching all of the women who are there now. But it seems as if they still have to ask permission from their male counterparts to say, well, can I talk about this?
Well, I don't think Gladys Wanda ever had to ask anybody's permission to be in politics, if I give her an example. Mm-hmm. And other women, of course, Dame Janet Borsvick and other women who ran in the FNM. You have to sometimes just go out there and take it. You'll find that in politics they call you, or she's aggressive, she's this, she's that, you know, and call you all of these names. But you have to learn to brush it off and, okay, if I'm aggressive, so what? Men are aggressive too. But if you want to survive in the political world, you have to be aggressive. You have to know when to speak. You have to know when not to speak. Sometimes you sit back and watch and learn the system first, and then you get more actively involved. So you have to kind of watch and bid your time as to when to move and when not to move. And that's strategic. You have to be strategic in the things that you do, and I think that that is important. So I was asked to run in the election before, the one that I actually ran in. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I wasn't ready. Mm-hmm. But when I was asked again was when I said yes. And I haven't regretted it. You know, I've done it. And like I said, it was a great learning experience, an experience that I would not have done.
So you're open to run again if you're asked again?
Yes, I'm open to running again. Of course, I still think I have a lot of contribution to make to the development of the Bahamas, and that's what it's about. I think through being in the union, you begin to realize that at the union level that you can't really make decisions. And if you you could kind of influence decisions sometimes, mm-hmm, based on your activism. But if you really want to make change, then you need to be in the halls of parliament in order to do that, to put forward law, to make law, those kinds of things, and to be where decisions are actually made. We at Point in Labour one time thought about having a Labour Party, but that never came to fruition.
Hmm.
But that, I think, you know, back, we need to get back to where Sir Randall perhaps was and the movement that he had. And I admire him so much, and I read his books and read what he did. And he was that kind of person who was key. But, you know, I think people in the trade union movement, there's enough of us to start our own party, to have put forward another party if we wanted to. Again, you know, we've all gone in different directions and joined other parties.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're in another party, you just have to do the best that you can to develop that party and to stress the importance of trade unionism and the importance of having a voice. And I think for women to have a voice, I think, is important. I say to people, I've learned through being in the trade union movement that social dialogue is important. It simply means that if there's a problem, we have to talk about it. I have to be able to see your side, and you must be able to see my side, and then we must be able to come to a common compromise, because you ain't going to get your way, and I ain't going to get mine. So we can be here around all day.
Good. I tend to be criticized, mm-hmm, often, because I tend to prod women to say, you're not doing enough in terms of promoting women agendas,
mm,
right? That you all are demure in terms of responding to women issues. And I see we're about to take a break shortly. But I want to ask you, and you can respond on the other side of the break, right?
Mm.
I want to ask you, do you believe that women are aggressive enough in terms of fighting for women's issues? There are a number of women who can be considered needing more help, needing more support,
mm-hmm,
needing more, what I call affirmative action. And I'm going to bait this for the next side. I saw the picture of the executive police force contingent, right? All of the executive assistant commissioner of police and so on. There's one woman in that picture who is once considered senior, but when you look at the picture, she seemingly in the picture has been demoted to the bottom. And no woman has said out loud, hey, I've recognized something I'm concerned about this picture. Right? But we can talk about that. I'm going to bait you some more.
Okay.
But we can talk about that on the other side of the break.
All right.
We're talking to Miss Jennifer Isaac-Dotson. We're talking about Women's International Day, and we're talking about her career and her legacy, and we're celebrating women in general. We're going to have a series of women come on, and we're going to discuss their narrative. And I'm celebrating Jenny because she's an awesome woman. I mean, she's powerful. We'll be right back. Have a wonderful day.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. Of course, I have Miss Jennifer Isaac-Dotson on with me. I'm celebrating her today as we celebrate International Women's Day. I'm going over her career and her accomplishments. And of course, I'm beating her with trying to do some tough off-the-wall questions. And of course, she's answering them like with a breeze. And my last baited question was about affirmative action for women, mm-hmm. right? I made mention about the picture of the executives of the police force, and they had about 10 persons that they highlighted as the executive branch of, I counted right now, 1, 2, 3, that's 9, make it 10, the Commissioner Clayton Fernanda has been the top, and then they have 9 other police officers, right? And I've noticed that at the bottom is Assistant Commissioner, let's say Delarice Ferguson.
Ferguson, yeah.
Yeah. And where'd Loretta gone?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I remember she was even being considered to be commissioner of police,
yeah.
You know, most senior woman on the police force, and she's noticeably absent. And I'm nothing wrong with that because I don't get involved in the politics of the police force.
Right.
But I do get involved in the politics of women because I grown up some young women. I'm trying to make them be independent and showing that they can be aggressive and take over the Bahamas because it's theirs for the taking.
Right.
And I pointed out to my child, I say, child, look for the woman among that, right? Mm-hmm. what you see wrong with this picture? And he said, there are not enough women represented, Daddy. Right. And I say, yes. And this is why I need you to speak out and make your presence felt. And this is where I am concerned, because there's no women's group who casually mentions, say, hey, congratulations to this executive team, right? This is good, right? However, we are noticing this. Right. And as a women's group, we are going to make mention to making me known that we are lobbying
for women.
Mm-hmm. Right? And I see that lacking inside of Bahamas in terms of women's group lobbying for women. Mm-hmm. Right?
I think we could do more when it comes to lobbying for each other. There's still a lot of work to be done to get us all to do that. There's a lot of other things that come into play. And we all know that women sometimes don't support women. We just simply look at it like, okay, this one is in, she's shining, so why am I not shining? And we tend to kind of look at it like that. But we have to realize that we've all had our time, and everything goes in a cycle, and today is you, tomorrow is me. And so it's important that when someone does something good, to say, good, and you know, you're doing a good job, and to encourage them. And I think that that's important. We need to do that more as women. There are a number of women organizations. You have Women's United, you have SeaWill, you have another number of organizations that are out there agitating for women and promoting them and encouraging them to be more involved in politics and in decision-making levels. And so I think that some of those organizations, perhaps their voices need to be heard more. And I agree with you, some of us could also speak up as well. I think that that is important.
Just registered a concern. But anyway, I just noticed things, and perhaps I just noticed things and critique too much, right?
No, that's a good observation.
I moving forward in regards to recommendation, advice for young girls, young women who join in the workforce, young women who want to go into politics, young women who want to join the union, young women who are in the union now. I need advice. What advice would you give them?
I would say that, you know, if you have a passion for something, then follow that passion. And I think that that is what spurs people to do something. Try to ask someone who's been there for assistance. I find that we don't like to ask for help or ask to be mentored. A lot of us don't want to be mentored. We just feel that, okay, we've arrived. We sometimes get a position in a union, and then all of a sudden, I don't need to talk to Jenny. I don't need to talk to anybody. I'm going to work this. But, you know, I think it's important to speak to other women who've walked that path. And that's why women like Janet Boswick, whenever she's speaking, I will be there, because she's walked that path. And the things that she says and the nuggets that she share, it's important. Cynthia Mother Pratt, the same thing. I'm saying these are women who have risen to quite a height in politics. And these are women that you should be emulating and, of course, learning from. And whenever they're speaking or saying something, you should be listening. And I think our young women need to realize the same thing. And don't be afraid to ask somebody, you know, do you mind mentoring me? Do you mind working with me? That kind of thing is important as well, to mentor a young lady.
What would you say to men who said women who are in charge lose their femininity?
I don't think so.
So you all won't be mine.
That's not the case. We don't want to be a man. We know what we are. We just want to be equal with men. As International Women's Day, speaking about inequality and speaking about equity, these are the things that we want. We don't want to be treated differently because of our sex. We are a human being, and we are all entitled to be able to do the same things, irrespective of whether we're a man or a woman. We're entitled to the same financing, the same health, the same different things that you should be, because you are actually a human being. It doesn't matter what your sex is. Women are not the weaker sex. I think men are the weaker sex.
Can you imagine? Are there still barriers that women face in terms of the workplace, in terms of accomplishing their dreams and goals?
I think there are a lot of barriers that women still face. They're overlooked a lot of times for promotion. A lot of people think women are too emotional, and oh, you always get upset, and you all like to cry and all of these stuff. But I know plenty of men who cry too. So, you know, I'm saying, you know, the emotional card that they tend to play with women, I think that could go on both sides. I think there are many women who are able to hold their own and have held their own when it comes to different organizations. So it's important to just simply hold your own and just know that you're equal to a man. I don't feel intimidated by a man. I don't feel intimidated by the prime minister. I don't feel intimidated by the leader of the opposition. I don't feel intimidated by anyone because I was never brought up that way. I was always taught that you could do whatever a man could do, and I still believe that. And I still believe that women have been the bedrock of our society. And if it wasn't for women, most of us wouldn't be where we are today. The women in our lives play pivotal roles. Again, we our matriarch society actually is the women who raise the children.
Women in charge of the church, women in charge of politics.
Yeah. Women are the ones who have the big sales, who fight for those, who do everything.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the women, many things in this country, the wheels would not turn. I'm sorry. You know, the men can't do it all on their own. So they have to learn that they have to have a woman by their side to do the job.
And there must be appreciation for the talent and skills also.
Exactly. You must. And you can't just keep calling women aggressive, or she aggressive, she rowdy. That's how when I used to travel, people would say, oh, you're that rowdy union woman. So I used to look at them. I said, do I look rowdy to you?
No, not at all.
They said, no. I said, yeah, so why are you calling me rowdy then? I said, when I'm passionate about something, it may come across as rowdy.
I'm going to ask my last trapsy question. The BUT president, Miss Belinda Wilson, I'm a fan of hers, actually.
Right.
And of course, persons tend to say, but man, she aggressive.
Yeah.
Right? But I think that she leads the number one union in the Bahamas at this present time.
Right.
In terms of being active, in terms of being involved, in terms of analyzing the issues and responding quickly.
Right.
And with information and data. Right? And even though she's had some challenges in terms of her union in general, she always proved to be successful. What is your general opinion of her tenure? See, that's trapsy enough. Yeah,
that's trapsy.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think Belinda's done a wonderful job in the BUT. As I said, I came up through the BUT, and Belinda was a part of BUT from back then. I've known Belinda all my life. Belinda grew up through Ross Corner. I grew up through Gibbs Corner.
Oh, are you all in the city?
Yes.
That's why you all like that.
And attended, sometimes they attended Transfiguration Baptist Church. I grew up in Zion Baptist Church.
Okay.
So, you know, there are connections between us. So and through sports, I've always known Belinda. We played on teams together. We played against each other. And so I've always known her. And I think, you know, I think she's becoming a bit more diplomatic in some of the things that she do. And I think she's beginning to understand the dynamics of some things. But she's, again, one who is passionate about representation and ensuring that things get done. And I think that's sometimes what you need. There's times to be tough. There's times to be diplomatic. There are times to be tough and hard. And sometimes that's what you have to be as a woman.
I appreciate you. I am definitely a fan of yours, as I'm definitely a fan of Belinda Wilson, too.
Right.
And I salute you on this International Women's Week Day for the contributions you've done to the Bahamas and for the Bahamas in general.
Right.
And I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. And I will continue to herald you as we continue this week and throughout the years.
Thank you so much. And it was a pleasure to be here on you. Yeah. Quite easy to talk to.
Easy, hey.
I'm going to be scared to come on your show.
I don't know. Anyway, this has been Guardian Radio with AM with C.A. Nuri. And of course, I was talking with the beautiful Jenny Isaac Dotson. And we're just having a conversation. I'm a fan of hers. Have a wonderful day.